Yo, energy fam, what the fuck's going on? Welcome back to the next episode of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. Alright guys, so, a little bit change of plan. I told you on the last episode that I was going to be kind of delaying the uploads of the episodes from two episodes a week to maybe one a week for the next month, just as I was getting this next phase of the brand completed and up and running. But I decided that the people must be entertained. So yeah, I wanted to get this one out as soon as I could. I really enjoyed this episode and I know that you're going to enjoy it too. So before we kick shit off and get it up and running, there is a few things that I just want to touch base on. The first is, as per usual, to give my love, gratitude, and thanks to each and every one of you that is tuning in, that has tuned in for the previous 51 episodes, or even if you're brand new to this and you're tuning in for the first time, I just want to say thank you. Without you, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. I wouldn't be able to run the Primal Alchemy brand. I wouldn't be able to do this podcast and connect with other like-minded individuals and just allow me to live the life that I've always dreamed of pursuing self-mastery and being able to share it with the world. So again, thank you so much. And it would mean the world to me that if you enjoy this podcast, if you could leave me a review, drop me some feedback on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iTunes. If you're listening to this on Spotify, if you can jump over to Instagram at Primal Alchemy UK and just drop me a line or two and tell me what you think. And if you're listening to this on YouTube, then please subscribe and drop me a comment in the comment box. I read every comment and it really does mean the world. Any little bit of feedback, guys, would be much appreciated. And in return, I always drop you the exclusive discount code REDPILL. That's the code REDPILL that when used at primalalchemy.co.uk, you'll get an exclusive 10% discount code off anything within your shopping basket at the time of purchase. So at the moment, guys, we do only have a few products online. We have our Vitruvian protein, which is our flagship organic whey protein superfood blend forged with adaptogenic, nootropic, prebiotic, and other high vibrational superfood and herbs, all formulated into one easy, delicious shake. So please check that out, see if you like it, see if you're in the market for the next generation of protein supplements to be released onto the scene. If not, we have our ancestral potential coaching programs. This is your chance to work one-to-one with me, be that through exercise, nutrition, biohacking, or self-mastery. If any of the above interests you, then please get in touch and I can give you a lot more details on what those programs actually entitle. And yeah, you'll get the 10% off if you use that code. So if you're brand new to the Primal Alchemy brand and this is the first time you're hearing about us, then we are in a stage of big time upgrades. We are going to be releasing a load of new products in the coming month or two. We're going to be expanding our Food of the Gods supplement range. We're going to be releasing a clothing line. And we're also going to be releasing our Avatar Upgrade Labs, where we'll be stocking some of the world's best biohacking equipment. The sort of equipment that you're going to become pretty familiarized with through listening to this podcast series, because I discuss this tech again and again on a lot of episodes. So we're actually going to be stocking it now for you guys at the best price that we can. So please check out primalalchemy.co.uk and keep an eye on it because there's big changes are coming. All right, so moving on to today's episode, guys. Today's guest is Mr. Mike Salami. Some of you may be familiar with him, some of you may not, but he is one of the driving forces in my life that has motivated me and really inspired me to take my kettlebell practice to the next level. Everyone who follows me on Instagram knows that I fucking beast those kettlebells near to much every day if I can. And Mike is, in my opinion, the gold standard when it comes to kettlebells, functional training, and just embodying what I believe to be like true holistic health. He really understands the importance of unifying the physical, mental, and spiritual into one cohesive package. and I was really looking forward to getting him on. It took me a while to be able to get our schedules to align so I could have this discussion with him. Fuck me, man. What the hell is up with my talking today? And we covered a lot. We discussed a lot about Mike's own journey in the fitness world, some of his opinions on where he sees the fitness world progressing, some tips and tricks for you to integrate into your own regime and life in order to help you holistically optimize yourself. Because this isn't all just about fitness, guys. This is about self-mastery. This is what I'm really focused on, because self-mastery is key to our ascension. And without our understanding of self, without knowing thyself, then all we're going to have is a aesthetically pleasing body. That's all. Just a shell with no depth on the inside of spiritual prowess. And let's jump on into this one. I really hope you enjoy it. And if you do, please drop me a line, drop Mike a line. All his details are listed in the show notes. And I think you're really going to enjoy this one. All right, guys, here we go. As always, Morpheus. You know the deal by now. Tell these fools what's...
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below. What lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality. The whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path. Looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar. As we go deep down to the molecular level, tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use the nature to heal. With a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal. And your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primer Open Me.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Three, two, one, and oh shit, sweet Hermes Trismegistus, this guys, we're back. It's episode 53 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour, and today we are gonna be going deep as per usual. Deep, guys, this one is gonna be great because as you're starting to get to know me a little bit more by now, 50 episodes deep, you know that I am one for unifying the mind, body, and soul. I am one that I don't fuck around when it comes to exercise. I don't fuck around when it comes to nutrition, but then I also don't fuck around on the spiritual realm either. And there are a growing number of individuals in the world now that are on the same sort of wavelength, that resonate with the same sort of message. And today's guest is someone that I have looked up to for quite some time since discovering his work, since discovering what he was about. And yeah, we're really in for a treat today, guys. I've managed to get him on. It was took a little bit of work. There was a little bit of clash of schedules here and there from when I was first trying to get in contact with him. But let's just jump straight into it. Like I'm fucking up for this. I'm up for it, man. It's gonna be fucking dope. Yeah. So today's guest is Mr. Mike Salemi. Mike, brother, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure, man. I'm very happy to be here. I'm happy we got to sync our schedules up. Yeah, it's been a little whirlwind, but we made it happen.
Yeah, man. Trust. Normally, I would give like a little bit of a better introduction to you, but I'm a bit of a fangirl here, so I just want to jump on in and just make the most of my time with you, mate. And really get some good information out for all the listeners and just explore you yourself and a little bit deeper, because I'm not going to be able to have the chance at the moment to hang out with you in real life, but that's
definitely something that may happen in the future. So I'm going to make the most of this time. So for, Mike, for everyone who is unfamiliar of what you're about, could you just give us a little bit of a breakdown of who you are, where you've come from, your sort of journey to where you are now, and then we'll really just branch off from there and we'll start to hit some gold along the way.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the way I describe myself to most people is just as a performance specialist, but with that comes total body, mind, body, spirit integration, much like what you're doing. And so for me, I started off, my journey always started off as an athlete, and that's where I always kind of look back to. You know, when I was a young kid, I started as a gymnast. Then after I went through a lower spine injury, then transitioned into powerlifting competitively for almost about 10 years, then did Olympic weightlifting in college, then almost 10 years in kettlebell sport. And now it's essentially like a combination of all that stuff. But when I kind of describe my background, as I mentioned, it always started as an athlete, as a student, and then now more or less a teacher. And so those three elements in my life kind of show up. And it's not like one, I would say, dominates the other, because my ability, like as I train myself as an athlete, it proves what I'm learning and what I'm teaching. And then I always consider myself a student. So I'm a performance specialist that really, you know, having studied with someone like, for example, like Paul Cech, it combines everything. You know, it's not just people who view me on social media might just be like, oh, he's the kettlebell guy, or oh, he's the Bulgarian bag guy. And I think society today, we like to label people. And a lot of times I get like a little taken aback when someone's like, oh, he's the kettlebell guy. I'm like, bro, there's so much more to me than just kettlebells. Like, you know, so performance specialists, I really try and do my very best to integrate mind, body, and spirit, and truly just build more balanced athletes and coaches in the world. Now, depending on what that person needs or how I can support them best, that can go in any number of ways. But that would be the truncated version of a little bit of my journey briefly and how I would describe myself.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I've heard you talk about this in a little bit more depth on other podcasts in terms of what would a new chapter, sort of which initiated a new paradigm of consciousness, new paradigm of living for you, which was going through Paul Cech's course. I was wondering if you could, just break that down for us in terms of the changes in your own sort of physical, mental, and spiritual health and sort of lens in which you looked through reality and once you were doing this whole, with your time with Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, what led me to Paul in the first place was an orthopedic injury that no one could really figure out. And so I had been really studying Paul's work. So now I'm 32, well over, like in depth, well over 14 years now. And I was fortunate enough when I was first starting off more or less as a strength and conditioning coach, I was working at a holistic lifestyle center. And that entire center was modeled after his teachings. And so while I was really taking, when we were talking about collegiate teams and being a strength and conditioning coach, I was more running that side. But it was an incredible, beautiful experience because every time I'd go back to the center or speaking with the owner, a guy named Brian Champ, I mean, he was doing in-depth nutrition. He was one of the first Czech practitioners in the entire Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And so he really paved the way for a lot of Paul's teachings to be integrated in both the performance realm as well as kind of the rehab corrective realm out here holistically. So just having conversations with him and then being supported by the staff there, that's really where I started learning about Paul. And at that time when I was more or less like 18 or so, it was kind of like towards the peak of my powerlifting competitiveness. And so, you know, I had digestive issues most of my life. You know, what I didn't find out till later was fungal and parasite issues, bacterial infections. I was having stomach ulcers. And so, you know, at that time, up until that point, I'd always done the very best I could from a diet and lifestyle side of things. But the information I had was honestly crap. It was shit. Like I was reading EAS nutrition books up until that point because that's all I knew, you know, and I was reading and studying. But it really blew my mind in terms of what I could do to take care of myself in a little bit more holistic way. Just, you know, starting to avoid certain foods that I was sensitive to or doing some functional medicine panels, et cetera. And so that's when I really first started learning about Paul and I started getting some amazing results. And every single year that I started going, kind of following more of the Czech teachings, I remember my first HLC class was actually with JP Sears. And so he was my first instructor. And I remember, you know, having, that was the first time I was really started playing with this concept of working in. And I remember on the breaks that would take us through all these working in exercises. And I was just amazed at honestly just how much more energy, vitality, and just connection with myself I felt from some of these movements. And when I looked back, I remember having a realization in that course. When I looked back, it was like the better and better that I was doing as a competitive athlete didn't necessarily come by training more in the gym. It typically came by mastering more technique, doing less volume, resting more, managing my mind a little bit better. And so, you know, fast forward a little bit, what sent me to Paul was this injury that no one could figure out. And, you know, it was an HLC2 that I was in line trying to sign my cheese stick. So I was super excited. I'm in line, like there's a line of 50 people. And I'm like, oh man, I'm going to get Paul to sign this stick. And I'm going to commit to all the days of meditation and 100 days straight of a gong practice. And, you know, I just had this feeling inside. I was like, man, I don't know if it's right for me to ask if, I really was at kind of the end of my rope. I didn't know who else to go to. And I was like, man, this is the only chance I'm probably going to get to speak to this guy. I want to see if he can help me. And so when I got up to him to have him sign the stick, I was like, looking back, I was like, wow, there's a whole line of people here, but this is my one, this could be my one and only chance to really speak with him. And so I just briefly told him what was going on. I said, hey, Paul, I'm a competitive athlete. I have this injury in my forearm. I lose all feeling in my arm during every competitive effort. My forearm swells up. Nobody really knows what it is. I've done everything I can, been following your stuff to the T. And he really just felt around, asked me a few questions and was like, you know, I can't promise you anything, but I do need to, I do think I know what's going on. I just need to have you on the table and examine it further. And to be honest, you know, till that point, I've probably seen 9 or 10 different practitioners, all super smart cats, all great people. And one of the things that blew me away about Paul, and I don't think I've shared this with other people, but I'm reflecting on it right now. You know, every other practitioner, again, was amazing, solid people, but almost every other practitioner promised me that they could heal me. Like every practitioner is like, I know what it is. I know what it is. I know what I can do. This modality will help. This modality will solve the problem. And he was actually the first, I think one of the first, if not the only person in that whole 2.5 year period that didn't promise me anything. And I remember during that whole time, like attaching so much to those promises, that I was like, if this motherfucker promises me something, I'll probably believe him. But there's always going to be that sense of doubt because I had put so much of my energy, so much of my life into this stuff. And so for him just to tell me, I can't promise you anything, was like, wow. All right, I want to dig deeper. I want to see what else is there. And so I went down for a full day assessment. And what we ended up doing was about 2.5 years of once a month. I live in Northern California. He's in SoCal. So it's like if I were to drive maybe like 12 hours, but like a solid hour. Yeah, damn, I mean, if you're cruising, I mean, California is massive, and there's still so much more north than me. California is huge, bro.
Fucking hell, man. It takes like, you can drive from one end of the United Kingdom to the top of Scotland in like less than 12 hours. That's absolutely insane.
Well, what we ended up doing was I ended up flying about, I drove occasionally, but maybe pretty much ended up flying once a month to work with him. We'd work together for 1 to 2 days, and I'd always been, you know, because I'd been studying his work, so I would always consider myself kind of into holistic health and high performance, but he kind of took it to a whole new level. And like, even though it was very on the orthopedic side, because I came to him for an injury, and so that's really what I needed to get solved. But as you know, with Paul's work, it's so, so much more than that. So looking at, I mean, I even just remember up until that point, I didn't really even have a concept of what a process goal was. And now looking back, that is like the main thing that I strive for is process goals and developing a healthy long-term philosophy for health, wellness, performance. But until that point, bro, like I can't even say, like I was so focused on the number, so focused on this repetition goal, what it's going to mean. And that's why it was such an emotional roller coaster every competition that I didn't get to hit it. So that's kind of what led me to Paul, kind of when I first started working with him. And then the process just, it was amazing. He's still a consultant for me. I don't go down once a month. But, you know, when I look at even just the knowledge of programming and program design and holistic program design, like now I feel quite confident, and through his blessing as well, like no matter what the program is, like even if I'm training with wrestlers right now, because I work a lot with combat athletes, with wrestlers or with firefighters or whatever it is, like I feel quite confident through his coaching. You could put any program in front of me and I'll be able to modify it based off of where I am in that moment, energy-wise, mental, emotional-wise, because every single program needs to be flexible. If it's not flexible, if the coach, and this is how I was coached for many years before that, if someone's telling you you need to do every single thing, rep sets, numbers, all this stuff, but doesn't allow the human aspect to come in, then you're just open, at least in my experience and what I found to be true for me, you're opening yourself to a whole host of blind spots. Hmm.
Yeah, I can imagine, and it's something that I've been delving deep into myself with Paul's work, and I love a lot of his philosophies of how he ties everything together. And he in his podcast he brings it up a lot, and I don't think people I might just be like categorizing people, but I don't think they appreciate how on point he is with a lot of this shit. And he's always quoting Rudolf Steiner, and most people are going to like, I don't even know who Rudolf Steiner is. And he's always bringing up Rudolf Steiner. And if you know who Rudolf Steiner is, then you're like, oh, okay, Paul knows who Rudolf Steiner is. That means that he's into some of the far out shit. Like, there's not many people that know who Rudolf Steiner is in these, in the health and fitness field anyway, or at least, quotes Rudolf Steiner when they're discussing topics regarding this world. And yeah, I've heard you talk about it before, and I know that Paul obviously talks about it because it's his sort of ingrained within his philosophy to do with like the yin and the yang. And then you've got the, obviously the yin is going to be the feminine anabolic, and then the yang is going to be the male catabolic. And it's all about, like you said, working in, working out, and being able to unify those two in order to find that sort of central point of where your being is at its most potential. And I've been trying to dig a little bit deeper with a few of the guests I've had concerning this whole working in process. And I'd love to be able to hear your perspective on it, on how beneficial it is, because it's easy to talk about working out because that's what, well, easy to talk about. It's what everyone's familiar with. It's the standard society norm. In there's so many different methodologies and ways of going about it, but working in is something that not many people discuss, or not to the level at which you can discuss working out at. So I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of a breakdown on that.
Yeah, at least my experience, you know, Paul, I didn't really do, to be honest, very much meditation before I started working with Paul. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the beautiful things about working in is, you know, at least in Paul's system, and that's really where, you know, I have to give him credit for that, because that's really where my knowledge, you know, first comes from it, and where I've had the most experience, but also success with it, you know, especially from competitive athletes, this Western world, this go, 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 the fitness industry, as you're saying, this do, do, do. What I've really found is, especially working with fighters and CrossFit athletes, it's very hard to get someone just to sit and be quiet and be with themselves. And so working in exercise can be any movement, any activity. It can be a squat, it can be a pull pattern, it can be anything you really want it to be moving wise. So it's not even so important the movement that's being performed, but it's the criteria in which you have to succumb to that makes it a working in exercise. And so what Paul was able to do was, in the beginning, he was taking familiar exercises that I knew, loved, and trusted. So whether it was a deadlift movement or a squatting movement or whatever, even kettlebell movements as well. Like once I got the conditioning level up to be able to sustain that, I was doing that. But essentially it was, no matter what the movement was, you go, Mike, I just need you to do a few things, four main things. One, when you're doing any of these movements, for ideally we're doing about 20 minutes, because that's really where the therapeutic deep benefit starts kicking in, 20 to about 45 minutes. One, your tongue has to stay moist, so your tongue can't dry out. Two, the heart rate can't elevate. Three, you can't start sweating. And four, if you were to eat a full meal, your digestion should improve. And that's actually, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's very, and I think with a lot of Paul's philosophies, they're very simple, but very fucking deep, like very deep. And I think the beauty is that duality is like, even I'm thinking about one of my closest friends, one of Paul's faculty, Jator Pierre. You know, Jator is hugely successful. You know, he lives in Denmark now, thriving business. He specializes in mental emotional coaching. He's one of Paul's top faculty. And we've had this conversation so many times because, you know, Jator's done consulting work for me too. And I'm like, with Jator, he always tells me, he's like, man, I'm just rice and beans. I'm just rice and beans. And what that means, it's like the way he's gotten some of the most complex cases, the craziest stories, is all by helping people with the most basic elements, because that's where we struggle the most. And so those four criteria, as simple as it sounds, but to one, implement it into a movement, but then most importantly, do it consistently. That is where the gold is. And so if we take those four criteria, right, and then we implement it in a movement that the athlete feels safe with, that the athlete feels comfortable with, that the athlete most importantly will do, then the results can be amazing. But essentially what we're trying to do is tap into the parasympathetic nervous system, obviously stimulate the rest, repair, digest side. But for me, it was a non-threatening way to go inward. And that is hugely powerful for athletes who spend their lives going outward. And so a lot of times what I'll do is I'll take fighters, for example, get them out of the gym, get them out of the effing gym, because they're in there all day. They're rolling. They're they're doing S&C training, excuse me. They're rolling on the mats. They're doing S&C training. And I think there's not only the movements that can provide a huge benefit with those criteria, but also removing the person from their environment can be hugely beneficial as well. So getting these guys to go on a hike or just even at a park, wherever it can be, but out of their normal environment, because when you go into your normal environment, you see the same people, you have the same training stimulus, you have your routine. The best athletes in the world, or the best, most successful people in the world, are going to have some type of routine, a morning routine, a pre-training routine, whatever it is, how they put on their gloves. And you have to, I feel like one of the best things you can do, at least initially, is separate someone from that routine, take them outside, take them into a completely different environment. Then if you can integrate elements of that into their normal routine, even better. But taking these guys out, taking them into a place where I can get them barefoot so that, one, they can be connected to the earth, which most of these guys are on synthetic mats all day, right? They're on plastic mats, or they're on, they're on the ring, or just on trainers, or on just rubber floors. So getting them out, getting them barefoot, getting them to do these movements that are not so threatening. Hey, we're just going to do squats for 15 minutes. My goal, make it a challenge, make it a task. I want to see if you can go for 20 minutes with me. Let's match my pace. And the only thing you're going to focus on, not technique today, none of that stuff, is just breathing and then focusing on those four criteria. So again, starting from like a non-threatening way that's familiar, but then seeing what happens. And so that's more of like the introduction and the physical side. But at least what I've known, especially through a regular practice, or what I've experienced, and this has been communicated with me by a lot of these athletes, is then talking after and seeing what came up. So because essentially it's just an active meditation, and then seeing what realizations or what new levels of awareness are created for them. So that's kind of how I've used it at a basic level. But I think that the gold comes into just doing it. You know, compliance is the hardest thing for people to do. But if you can just get people to do it and get them to commit to it in a way that feels safe for them and that feels comfortable for them, I mean, the results can be amazing. Not only a physical standpoint, but from a mental, emotional standpoint as well.
What are some of the results that you've had from it? What was the first wave of results that you found from it?
Well, I think another result right now. Like, I remember when I was first starting with Paul, and we would start with breathing squats, and then we would start with like overhead swings, like super, super light, like I don't even know, like 4 kilos. And then as I would get, because you're doing these movements, right? And these are total body movements, breathing squat, kettlebell swing, even though they're very light. So in order to stay into that parasympathetic state and those criteria, you have to be quite effing conditioned.
For 20 minutes.
So like even with 20 minutes, like
just
imagine
swinging a, just swinging a 4 kilogram kettlebell for 20 minutes, that'll gas most people out. That'll wreck people.
Exactly. Like, and you have to, you can't sweat. So like, imagine, cause like, you know, we do charity events where we'll do clean and jerks for an hour, but that's a working out thing, right? This is, can you do it? But also, and so the competitiveness in me as well is like, I'm not gonna do that. So, but the strategy with that I'll share with you and the listeners, the way that we kind of would do that was, you know, you take whatever the movement is. So let's say the total movement, the highest level of the movement was, I don't know, a four to an eight kilo overhead swing. So there's a that's the key too. Has to be into the overhead position because there's a moment of pause. So in that moment of pause, you can recycle the energy a little bit. Then you go down and you go up. But as soon as you start, the heart rate starts elevating and you start sweating, then you need to regress the movement. So you could set the bell down. You could go into reduced range of motion breathing squats. And then as soon as you kind of regain that momentum, then you can go back into it. But ultimately, it took almost like six months with just like one. Actually, I think we even got up to doing clean and jerk with two bells. But I remember 6 months was kind of the duration. So I also noticed incredible physical benefits. Just the ability to, from a strength endurance standpoint, because kettlebell sport is the strength endurance sport. We have to go for 10 minutes without setting the bell down. So we used a similar type pattern that was involved in the lift, something that was familiar, something that would have functional carryover. But then what we would do is, like, I remember, you know, one of the main reasons why he put that in for me was he was saying that, you know, in the later minutes of a set, when someone's going into a sympathetic dominant state and they're starting to gas out, I want you to kind of go back to that place from your work ins. Mm-hmm. Both from a physical, I want you to be conditioned enough to where you can go and remain that parasympathetic state, but also mentally stay there as well. So I noticed tremendous physical benefits just from incrementally and slowly scaling up the volume to be able to handle a movement like that for 20 minutes and still stay in a restful repair state. So there was huge physical benefits, even though that probably wasn't the first like goal of them. But then honestly, just going barefoot, especially from someone who's worn shoes his whole life, and I'm still working on my feet regularly, but that was, as simple as it sounds, just going barefoot and feeling the earth beneath the feet is an incredibly grounding feeling, and I'm sure you're aware of it. And so when you're talking about most athletes, myself included, have always lived between two extremes. We're either all or we're nothing. We're either all in or we're all out. We're either feast, famine. It's just like this. And so I think the goal is to get someone to kind of arrive into the wave in between a little bit more. And so connecting with the earth, not only did I feel just more grounded and more balanced and more just at peace, but I was able to sink into the movements that much more. And the working in component is, it's an active meditation. So some of the things to answer your question was physical, for sure, physical performance, feeling more grounded, feeling more at peace with myself. Those were also moments of check-in. So as I would progress, you know, week to week, month to month, I'd try and have an intention before I would go in, or a question or something like that, much like I do right now before I go into a float tank. So I use float tanks at least 3, sometimes 5 times a week. And I'll have a question or intention I'm trying to think about before I'll go in. Then I'll try and let go of the question completely and just go through the meditation or go through the work in. And so physical performance, feeling more grounded, but then getting answers to questions that I was like, I could never have fathomed that they could come out through the meditation. Sometimes they were answered, sometimes they weren't. And so it could be anything. Why is a relationship not working for me? Or why are there certain parts about myself that I'm not necessarily happy with? Or why does the same pattern keep repeating in my life? So I'd ask these certain questions, and in that kind of state, not all the time, but a lot of time they would get answered.
Interesting, man. I've come to very similar conclusions from observations of myself as well. One of the points you made then is about being grounded, especially when you're doing like the kettlebells. Do you find that's a big plus? Like, big, do you see it? Do you feel a big difference when you're grounded using the kettlebell?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in any training tool, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm in gym so much that it's like, I remember I made this mistake. I learned the hard way, but like, I remember trying to take a group of CrossFitters. A lot of times I like doing working out exercises in conjunction with working in. So it could be a four exercise circuit of kettlebell movements, right? Swing, squat, press, and a get up or something like that. But then the rest period could be a working in exercise. And, or it could be two exercises that work well with one another, a workout and a work in, and I'll do both. And I remember trying to introduce this topic at a CrossFit gym, and they were digging it. But then in the background, dudes were dropping, like, I don't even know, 100 kilos overhead in the snatch. So people would be doing a breathing squat with me, and then boom, 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 boom. And I was like, all right, this environment isn't so conducive to it. But and I think that's also why getting them out of the environment can be super helpful. But the more grounded you are, the more present you are. I have a routine or like a practice before I approach any weight, no matter what it is, if it's a barbell, if it's a kettlebell, if it's a Bulgarian bag.
Mm-hmm.
Like, realizing there is no rush. There's no rush. When you're there, you're fully present. And so I'll usually step back behind the weight, take a few breaths. I always like stepping forward with my left foot, then my right foot. Then on like a swing, I set my hips, set my shoulder. So there's a routine that goes on. One, to remove any kind of decision overload. I like to keep things automatic. But that what those work-ins, I think, showed me was, yes, being grounded, but before you approach any weight, because how you set up for any lift, not only orthopedically, not only setup-wise, but also mentally, is going to have a direct carryover in terms of how you execute it. So being grounded, not only going into the gym, but before every single lift, is something that you can really hone in on, really practice. And if you think about, I mean, just think about this, like, how many meals do we eat a day?
Most people, it's going to be like six or so, depending if you're depends what, if you're keto, if you're not, then if you fast, then yeah, six meals a day for most people if they're a slave to their blood sugar and the parasites in their stomach.
Yeah, so let's say six. We'll say three to six, right? So just like in the gym, how many sets are we going to do? Probably, I have no idea. It depends on the sport, depends on the goal. But let's say between 18 to 35 sets in a workout. It's pretty reasonable, right, in an exercise. So we have, and we're training between 3 and 6 days a week. Let's just say it's 30 sets. If we're training 5 days a week, that's 150 opportunities for us to approach a weight in a certain way. If we're eating five meals a day and we have 7 days in a week, that's 35 opportunities a week that you have to check in with yourself. And it only takes a moment. Only takes a moment to approach the meal, to put your hands over your food, to give thanks, to check in with yourself. That's one thing I've observed in myself over the years, is I'm always checking in with myself. How are you feeling? Did you go to the bathroom this morning? Did you drink your water? Did you do your morning routine? Like, I'm always saying that to myself and checking in. And every single one of those is an opportunity. One thing that comes up for me right now is just thinking, so there's a client that I have in New York. So anytime I'm teaching in New York, I go see him. And he lives literally right next, one of my favorite clients, right next door to a monastery. And so he books me to stay there for the night, and then I train him. And it's an amazing experience, because I'll stay with the monks. And so I get to eat breakfast with them, lunch and dinner, which is so cool. And I remember asking one of the monks last time we were eating, because they have this little like card on the top of the table that says, it's like painted, it says mindful eating. And I was asking him, I was like, you know, what is mindful eating to you? And I remember, you know, I don't remember the exact words of the story that he was sharing with me, but essentially was, you know, what had happened was, is when I'm training this client, sometimes I'm missing dinner at the monastery because I'm working with him later, we're going over paperwork or whatever. And so at the beginning of the first trips, I would forget to let them know. Like, I'd forget to let the monks know that, hey, I'm not going to be there for dinner. And it's very simple food, right? And I remember him telling me that, like, that wasn't very mindful of me, or that wasn't very thoughtful of me, because, you know, the next morning for breakfast, you can see into the kitchen on one side. And I looked into the kitchen and I remember observing the people cutting, and it was so crazy because how they were cutting, just like carrots, was literally one slice at a time. There was so much presence, so much intent in every single movement. And he was sharing that in eating, it's just like any other activity they do. For him, meditation is gardening. For him, meditation is going for a walk. For him, meditation is having a conversation. And he was saying, and it hit me so hard, and I felt like shit. I felt so horrible that these people were not only cooked, not only was the meal that I wasn't there for not able to go to someone else, but then I thought, holy crap, these ladies and guys were cutting my carrots for probably an hour. Like, that's how long, that's how much love, that's how much care. And so everything, it can be a meditative activity, whether it's working in, whether it's eating your meals, whether it's how you approach the weight. So the greater scheme of things is being grounded, but then how that shows up. And I was just, that's something I'll never forget. And it really stuck with me that I was like, wow, like how slowly I see this guy walk down the path of every step, how when I look at this monk, like taking a look at a flower and sitting there for 5 minutes, I'm like, that's how much time they're spending on cutting my cherry tomatoes and putting that love. And so it was just a big realization for me. So taking that into those activities that are kind of mindless, but then developing that routine in the gym, in our meals, those things that we have the opportunity to do over and over, can be hugely beneficial and helpful.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's the, like you said, you've got so many opportunities, and that intention is key. Intention is key within every practice, and intention can have a big impact on the food. If your intention's in the right place, you can literally change the physiological process of how you metabolize the food through your intention of it. And people would be like, that's fucking far-fetched, mate. That doesn't exist. But it's true. Like, it really does have an effect. And that's probably where, if you dig deep enough, maybe more of the esoteric foundation of giving prayer at a meal, it's probably rooted somewhere in that the priests of the ancient Christianity, be it Gnosticism or wherever that practice stemmed from, I'm pretty sure it would have had something to do with the intention of blessing the food in order to increase the prana, the life force energy, whatever it is, from the food itself. And the same with when you're working out, the intention is key. And one of the points I wanted to bring up on that you mentioned, Mike, that gets me thinking is because, yeah, like I'm a big kettlebell advocate and I love doing it outside. And the way that I'm thinking about it, obviously, if you're grounded, you've got the negative ionic exchange coming from the earth up to you. So you're getting those negative ions up through the system. So you're creating, as well as the movement, with the piezoelectric properties of the body, you're creating that electrical charge. And then if your fingertips are the end points, the end terminals of your central nervous system, and you are gripping onto a kettlebell, then what you're doing in essence is creating a closed circuit. Whereas if your hands are open, then that energy is coming out of your hands. But if you're on a kettlebell and it's conductive, then you're creating a closed circuit loop, which is going to circulate that energy around your body. Now that might be quite pseudoscience to most, but I'm pretty sure there must be something to it, because when you're outside and you're out in the sun, grounded, doing some kettlebells, you're pretty charged up as fuck. Like you can feel that there is a difference than standing under the fluorescent lighting of a gym, getting blasted by blue light, EMFs, all of that shit. It definitely does make a difference being outside. And yeah, I wanted to quiz you a little bit on the kettlebells as well, man, because you are like the kettlebell king of 2019. So I would love to get your opinion on what do you think are the three foundational exercises for someone who's getting into kettlebells? Like, what would be your, actually, you know what, even cut it down to one. Just what would be your main, if every, just say you had like, everyone knows all of everyone knows how to do kettlebells. Everyone knows they've got perfect technique. What would be the go-to if you had good technique on everything? What would be your ultimate exercise?
Man. So, all right. So you said something pretty solid there in the sense of like, imagine that everyone has solid technique.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, for me, it's always like, what's the goal and who's the individual? And that can be a very helpful guide because most people from an individual standpoint don't have the flexibility, stability. They can't meet the orthopedic prereqs to do any of the movements. And so, dude, when I go out and teach, like everyone's like, oh, I'm good. Like, I got kettlebells.
You're not good.
Great. Like, great. Let me see with my eyes. And dude, like, I can't even say, like, I mean, I'm a pretty positive coach and like very optimistic and I love supporting people. But if you're asking me, like, there's usually a huge disparity between where someone is and where they think they are. And so, but let's just say like we've passed all that. Let's just say like they've gotten to the point where their body can't handle all of the movements. I mean, at that point, it also, and this will kind of be a roundabout way, because I'll give you two answers. One of the things that I've really discovered in myself, and the more I'm out there teaching, is especially with these unconventional training tools. You know, Paul always said the best exercise is the one you're willing to do regularly. And each one of these tools I've seen, and I'm sure you'll have seen this too, is people gravitate towards specific S&C tools. Like there's a specific type of person, maybe it's because I competed in these sports, that gravitates towards powerlifting. Specific type of person that gravitates towards Olympic weightlifting. Specific type of person that gravitates towards kettlebells. Now, certain people might do multiple tools, but I also feel like not only the exercise, but it's also the implement and the movements. Like I absolutely love the snatch. I love the snatch. Total body, lower body integration, power endurance exercise kills the grip. You get a rotational aspect to it. Depending on what technique you use, if you're using more of a hinge-based Russian type technique, it's going to be more power endurance focused. If you're focusing on more, let's say, a kettlebell sport inspired technique, that's going to use what we call pendulum mechanics. That's more strength, endurance, and endurance. So, I mean, I love the snatch, but is that the best exercise for everyone? I don't know. It kind of depends what the weak point is. So after what's the goal, what's the individual, I always ask, like, okay, what is their weak points? Because maybe the Turkish get up might be a phenomenal exercise for them, right? But it's a slower movement. So there's really no one answer, but one of the things I've realized is each personality of person gravitates towards a specific implement and even set of movements. Like my one of the kettlebell coaches that I work with, he's 8-time world champion, Dennis Vasiliev. He did 101 reps of double 32 clean and jerks without setting the bells down, 101 in 10 minutes. So 72-ish pounds, 74-ish pounds, 32 kilos each, 101 reps.
That's insane, man.
Crazy. But like for him, that, well, it's clean and jerk, so it's two movements, but that one competitive lift, like he does some other stuff for sure outside of that, like some squats and stuff like that, but that's the vast majority of a training, and some snatch and stuff like that. But that one movement for him literally could keep him so happy and so engaged for the next 20 years. Like, he'll spend, and I love this and I respect this, and it's taught me a lot. Like when I go, D, you know, what's the focus for the next training phase? Like, what are you really working on? He's like, and he's got, I can't even replicate his accent, but like Russian accent. And imagine that. And he's just like, no lock, Mike. I'm working on the no lock. So essentially for the entire phase, what that means is when he cleans the bells into the rack position, as opposed to putting one hand on the other, he's just working on this. He's just working on landing in the rack position where both hands are separated just slightly. And that's the only thing out of the hundreds, if not thousands of reps that he's doing in a 8 to a 10 week cycle before hump that he's focusing on, which is so amazing to me. But that's also how, you know, if he can save 1, 2, 3% on every single movement, imagine out of 100 repetitions, how much percentage of energy and efficiency he's creating. Yeah, so it's like, now he has the foundation set. But just that one movement for him is like personality-wise, total body movement, he gets a tremendous benefit. But for him, that's the best movement there is.
Dude, yeah, it's insane. And the other stuff that I've seen you have as well is you actually got me into it, because it was the Bulgarian bag. And I'm telling you, man, people really underestimate how hard that thing is. And when I watch you, you're like, so I was like, okay, you know, I'm in the right shape. I got some power. Like, I could probably pick up this okay. I got some pretty good physical intelligence. So I'll be okay. And then I started doing it, and I felt like I was going some, and I recorded myself. And I looked so slow, and I was like, how the fuck is Mike going so fast when he's doing this? Because the torque that you're developing, and you just the speed at which you can do those. And then when I did it compared to myself, I was just like, man. I was like, I don't know what you must feel like when you're in the driving seat of when you're doing these swings, but you must feel like literally 1, 2, 3, 4. You must be going some with like when you're doing your speed, man. It's a really big fan of those Bulgarian bags, though, since I've been integrating it into my personal regime, as well as the kettlebell. And I think that that whole training system is definitely on the path to blowing up. I think it's amazing. Some of the other equipment, when I see, what's that ball called when you've got it and it's like that elasticated ball and you're like swinging it side to side, and what's that called?
We call that one the Supless ball. So Supless, just named ball. After the company, and it's Supless ball. Yeah.
Okay. Well, pretty straightforward. Supless ball. Yeah. How long you been doing how long you been doing the Bulgarian bag for?
10 years. 10 years.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. And is it quite big stateside now?
You know what? So, well, one thing, just to go back to one of your last questions, if I to the favorite exercise, I would say like snatch and get up. If someone if they had the technical experience, like snatch and get up. But beyond that, yeah, man, like the Bulgarian bag is amazing. And anyone who remotely likes kettlebells and like, dude, it's just like a match made in heaven. Because I mean, kettlebell movements in general, you can do, I always say you can do rotational movements with kettlebells, but it's like a stretch. Like, you have to be very technically skilled, and it's more sagittal plane movements as a whole. Mm-hmm. Bulgarian bag, you can do sagittal for sure, but it's all about rotation, how you accelerate, decelerate. I mean, every tool and every implement, as I mentioned earlier, can lend itself well to a specific personality. But also, like, one of the things, like, I mean, just to give maybe a listener's an idea, like, I'll use heavier bags from time to time, but I only typically use about 80% of my training a 26-pound bag. 26. When I'm competing in kettlebell sport, I'm doing between double 32 kilos and double 40 kilos. And then my best deadlift was 615. So I don't even know, like something like 270 kilos, something like that, maybe. Somewhere in that realm. I have no idea, but 2.2 is the conversion. So just 26 pounds. And I am smoked after a Bulgarian back session is a testament to how truly unique and different that tool is. And I get so many people who write me and be like, oh, you know, what should I do? And I ask them some questions in terms of like, okay, what's your training age? What tools do you work with? What's your body weight? What's your height? And then I'll make my recommendation. And 8 out of 10 times the guys will be like, oh dude, that's too light for me. That's too light. And I'm like, bro, it's a completely different implement. If you know how to use it, because you're dealing with so much acceleration, change of direction, momentum, the rotation, the transverse plane, which nobody effing trains in today, it's such a unique tool. So I've been using it for 10 years, but it's only been in the last few years that I've really started using it to its potential. Mm-hmm. Because I started going to Boise, Idaho, where the inventor is, Ivan. So I started training with him and learning from him. But in the US, it's still in its very infancy stage, because Ivan Ivanov, the inventor of the bag, was the former US Olympic Greco-Roman wrestling coach. He was an Olympian for Bulgaria as well. And 100% of the marketing dollars primarily, and all of his focus is not just the bag, but the other four tools in the Supless system, supporting wrestling. Like, wrestling is his mission. To make better wrestlers, to elevate the image of wrestling, to give back to that sport. And so there hasn't been much time, energy, or effort really promoting it fitness until very recently. So it's really up to people, like, for example, me, who's traveling a lot, to get this thing in people's hands, to really, because even on social media, like, it looks cool, but, like, until you get your hands on it, as you know, like, it's a totally different tool. And so it's still very much in its infancy stage, but most anyone who's had an opportunity to get their hands on it, where I can show them a few things and show them some routines and stuff, they love it, especially kettlebell people.
Yeah. And one of the first things that strikes you as soon as you get hold of it is, especially for me, because I got like these little pussy bitch ass hands. I got tiny hands. It's like trying to grip the thing, and I'm just like, fucking hell, man. It's like, how am I gonna this thing's like, you swing it once and you're like, Jesus, this is gonna go flying. And it's a definitely, you feel your forearms just absolutely wrecked afterwards from swinging this around. And I don't know what the weight is, actually. We've got three at the gym that I go to, and I don't know what the weights are, but they're heavy enough to sort of really make you feel it. And I could only imagine, what's the heaviest weight that Ivan makes?
Well, do you recall the colors on the bags? Are they leather bags? Do you recall the colors on the straps by chance?
I want to say red.
Red. So that's 26. That's like 12 kilos. That's like the perfect bag for you. That's my new training bag.
Yeah, I want to say red, and I think there is a green.
Green will be one lighter. That's 17 pounds. I'm not sure what the kilo, probably like 8 kilos.
Yeah.
And then gray is usually the other one above that.
Okay. Yeah.
Or yellow, one down.
Ooh, that's a good shout with the gray. Yeah, I'm gonna check them out. If that's the way that it's tiered through that, I never knew that before. So I'll check that out. So what was gray? Sorry.
Gray is 37 pounds, but so kind of like, I'm sure. So with kettlebells, right?
They're Who uses that?
What's that?
Who uses gray, man? It's some superhuman like Yoel Romero type character that's gonna be throwing that around.
No, so I'll use gray all the time. That's like a weight that I'll use as well. But gray's only 37 pounds. But so imagine, so like kettlebells, right? Before, for many years, it used to be 4 kilo increments on every weight, right? Mm-hmm. So the four main weights I would say that I recommend and see and to all gyms and all people, the four main weights are going to be 11 pounds, 17, 26, and 37. With those four weights, like you can, like Ivan was conditioning Adam Wheeler, who I think was a bronze medalist at one of the Olympic Games, with 200-pound beast of a wrestler, only 200 pounds with only a 37-pound bag. So you can train at the highest level with just that weight. So there is also incremental weight. So just like kettlebells, now they make 2 kilo increments as like incremental jumps. With the Bulgarian bag, in between each of those weights, those main jumps, 11, 17, 26, 37, mm-hmm. he's got 1 to 2 bags in between. Okay. But he's also got as heavy as 84 pounds is the heaviest pound.
Man.
Imagine like how difficult it is from just transitioning from 26 to 37 is a massive jump, massive with that tool. It's just like with kettlebells, like switching from even like 24 to 32 kilos.
It's a big jump.
It's huge.
Big jump. Yeah. Like you feel it. Like it's like, wow, this is, this is big jump. Yeah.
In kettlebell sport, that type of jump to actually hit a respectable level of numbers at 24 and 32 could be, I mean, if you're full-time, at least a year, but potentially up to 3 year transition to make that jump. So yeah, he's got up to 84. I think the heaviest I've worked with, I don't recall if I've spun the 84, but the heaviest I've actually done work with has been 64, 64, 67, one of those weights. And, but you know, it's an amazing, amazing tool. And with that, with just one bag, kind of like one kettlebell, but even with the Bulgarian bag, with just one bag, what you can accomplish is just incredible from an athletic standpoint.
Yeah, they really are incredible, man. In terms of athletic development, I really rank them. I don't know anything else that really touches them, and it's interesting. The gym that I train at is a brand new facility. Our gyms in the UK are a little bit different than the US. Your sort of run-of-the-mill gym in the US would be like a very high-end gym here in the UK. So I've been fortunate where the place that just opened near me is like an MMA performance center. It's one of the best in the UK, and we've got all of this cool functional fitness equipment. We've got, yeah, it's really well thought out in the equipment choice as well. And I just think that the kettlebells and the Bulgarian bags are just such an important piece of equipment for anybody to begin to at least experiment with. Because most of the time you've got a few of the shitty kettlebells that you'll find at a commercial gym, and ideally you want the competition kettlebells, in my opinion, just so you get a solid technique down, and obviously the size of the bell doesn't increase or decrease according to the weight that whatever it is that you're doing with, so your technique can reasonably be the same throughout. And I just think it's amazing, man. I couldn't say I really want to come over to the States and see the whole sort of kettlebell world, because it's here in the UK, it is pretty much non-existent. So you get some people that are interested in kettlebells. And I had Steve Cotter on the podcast a few weeks back, and me and him were discussing about the kettlebells and how he started, and him and Pavel back in the day. And yeah, it was great talking to him about it. But again, most people in the UK are just going to be completely unfamiliar with those names, with the kettlebell sport is definitely non-existent here in the UK, as far as I'm aware anyway, I'm pretty sure. And it's just, yeah, it'd be great to be able to get things like that started over here, because introducing it to people, because here it's just the same old shit, same old, just doing isolated exercises, bodybuilding regimes. And there is an increase in interest in functional fitness, but when you actually look at it from a broader perspective, yeah, there hasn't been much progression here on the UK scene for a long, long time. And you guys over in the States are really flying the flag in that, yeah, there seems to be quite a lot of progression over the past decade. It seems to be a lot of change, a lot of new experimental ideas, philosophies that are beginning to be really sort of show the benefits are beginning to be reaped, like the fruits are coming to fruition for the people that have been committed to these pursuits for X amount of years. And I think that's someone like yourself. I mean, there's a lot of people in the UK that know about you. Like I've told many people that I was having you on, and they were like, "Yo, you're getting Mike Salemi on?" And I was like, "Yeah, man." I was like, "You know, yes." They're like, "It's gonna be dope, man." So I mean, definitely there's definitely influence in the UK for this sort of thing, which also leads me into something new as well, man, because I know I've only got you for about 20 more minutes, and I want to go off on a slight tangent because there's something I wanted to cover with you, but I kind of, yeah, just want to get into it now, which is everything to do with being a modern day male. And the fitness industry can promote the complete opposite. It can promote all of the shadow aspects of the divine masculine. And most of the big time influencers, be that on social media or just in the fitness world in general, yeah, what they embody is almost the complete opposite of what a true alpha, a true male that is in touch with the divine spark inside of him really promotes. And what's been your journey, dude? Because I know that for me personally, when I was younger, I was very creative. I was very artistic. I was, in essence, what I was in tune with that femininity, the feminine nature of creativity. That's what the divine feminine is. It's like chaotic creativity. And yeah, and as I started to get older, when the testosterone started to creep its way into my system and flood my mind, I started to get very barbaric, started to get into my physical fitness, started to get into just heavy weight training, getting into, as most young guys do around the age of 14, 15, especially if they're in competitive sport as well. And I started to push all of the creative stuff aside. I was like, don't want that pussy ass faggot shit. It's like, no interest in that whatsoever. It's all about just going to stick on with this. And then you hit a brick wall. And then what needs to happen then is that you need to be re-exposed to that other side in order to integrate that into your being, in order to complete your, in order to realign yourself with your complete essence. And through developing this brand, it allowed me to get back in touch with that creative feminine force. And through that, I've started to see gains everywhere. I've seen it in my mental state, in my physical state, in my spiritual state, and just everything that I embody. It's really starting to get back in touch with it. And I'm starting to get into, get real in alignment with the archetypes of the divine masculine, be it the king, the warrior, the magician, the lover, really starting to shine a light on those archetypes, embody them, get rid of the shadow self, which is so easily, it's so easy to fall enslaved to the shadow's control. And I was wondering your own personal journey through this, because every male has his own journey. He'll have his own trials and tribulations that he faces. And it's normally through these trials and tribulations that you are subconsciously faced with essentially reuniting with that certain archetype, or coming to peace with that certain archetype. And then once you've learned that lesson, you move on to the next and you become more and more complete along the way. So yeah, what's your perspective on everything around those lines?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that we talked about earlier was the working in aspect. And I feel like that has been such an incredible tool, because like, if you think about working out is the yang side of stuff, the working in is the yin side. So in and of itself, working in exercises, whether it's Tai Chi, whether it's a meditation, or whether it's just breathing squats, that in and of itself is bringing in cooling feminine energy into yourself. And so especially within so close proximity to a workout or within a workout session, to have that balancement of energies was just, I mean, it's just been incredible. Like we talked about grounding, getting our feet on the earth. I mean, those are all restorative ways that we can connect with ourselves. And, you know, when we're looking at, let's just say the, I don't want to say classic, but the most types of males that I encounter in the fitness industry, because I think outside of the fitness industry, maybe it's a little different, but like in the fitness industry, it is going to be that exactly that egoic, that kind of, I don't want to say, I mean, ego is not bad at all by any means, but like just that fucking tough brute grind, put other people down, vain, stuff like that. And one thing that I've noticed, you know, since I was a kid, I've always been very heart-centered, like always been very, just very heart-centered. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years is like in those times when I've been more susceptible to kind of like being, let's say, what other people wanted me to be, I realized that I was leaving more of that heart-centered approach and being more mind-focused. And I feel like one of the things today to be a more balanced male, to be a healthy male. And I mean, one of my dream is to build more balanced athletes and coaches in the world too. I've had visions, and, you know, I'd love to share a little bit about some of the plant medicine work as well, because, you know, I've had this vision multiple times in ceremony, that seeing myself supporting a group of young male warriors through kind of like rites of passage. So taking guys from like 25 to 35. And when I say warrior, I don't mean someone who's just the ability to fucking go into battle. And battle today could be anything. It could be in the gym, it could be the next set, whatever it is. But to come from a heart-centered place, like that is the true warrior. Like to be a spiritual warrior, to be someone who's connected with themselves, who does these working in exercise, these activities. I mean, that is what honestly gives me as much fulfillment and joy as teaching someone kettlebell movements or whatever. How do we balance those energies? And so for me, you know, I've always been heart-centered, and it's been a journey of remembering that. And so through work-ins, et cetera, but mainly through honestly like plant medicine experiences and some of the plant medicine work, it's been such a reminder to go back to that heart-centered place, to allow myself to be vulnerable. A lot of people, when they hear vulnerability, they're like, oh, vulnerability is weakness. And to me, vulnerability in the men that I surround myself with, whether it's Paul, Jatour, when I look at the types of males in my life that I enjoy being around, time is so precious and so limited that it's like every single person in my life I want to add to my life, and I want to do the same for them. And I've really been more and more aware at these men in my life, because also we have a great little community here, like a, you know, plant medicine community here in the Bay. And like, I'm telling you, like, the, like, if you were to come over, and hopefully you do one day, you know, I'd love to meet you in person over here. Like, the fellas that I'm rolling with are bad asses without saying their names. Like, one's going to be one of the U.S. Olympic coaches for Taekwondo. One almost went to the Olympics for wrestling. Brother went to the Olympics for wrestling. Like, these are fucking fighters, but they're very heart-centered. And it's so amazing to see this healthy masculine, this person that can be that firm, action-oriented, logical, rational, strong, all those things, but then also be very soft and be able to hug one another and go hug heart to heart. And like, it might sound soft to people, whatever, but for me, that is the strongest aspects of a man. When you can be both, when you don't live in both these extremes, when you can be vulnerable, but be strong and be stable. And I feel like remembering that, and there's nothing more powerful, at least in my experience, than in those plant medicine experiences, when you're reminded of that from a visceral feeling and you're more sensitive in those areas. And also, you mentioned the shadow side. Like, one of the other things that comes up for me, that was one of the big messages I got in a recent ceremony, was, you know, what am I not looking at? Like, what am I not looking at in my life, that whether it's conscious or unconscious, that I'm avoiding? And so that could be specific relationships, that could be healing parts of me that I didn't want to see. But also, as a male especially, being courageous enough to look at those parts of yourself that you have not been dealing with requires a lot of courage. And that's going to be unique to each one of us, and a lot of vulnerability. Because I remember JP told me once, or maybe I heard him in a class or something, like, in order to heal, you need to feel. And so if we don't feel, we don't allow ourselves the capability, the opportunity to heal. So, you know, that for me is really what comes up. So allowing ourselves to feel, to be vulnerable, so that, one, we can connect with ourselves first and foremost, and then we can have a deeper connection with those around us. Because never more in my life have I really seen the importance than now of community, and like, and how each one of these people in my life are adding to my life. Before, I would have always said, you know, I can do it all myself, and I would be like a hermit. Like, I would literally go for a training cycle, 3 months, don't talk to anyone, just train, put my head down, and I could do that. And it got to a certain place. But then now what I've realized is there's so much richness in life through community, through me having this conversation with you. I grow, you grow, we grow, everyone who's listening grows. And so, you know, that takes also, like, that wasn't my natural state. And so connecting back with that heart-centered approach, I feel, is like one of the most beautiful things that men can do today.
Yeah, I really love what you said then as well, about you can become very, very absorbed into living through your mind instead of being able to live out of your body or to connect into your body. And that's one of the things that I really like about, if you're open to it, it's going in with health and fitness, like really connecting with your body, developing your body's intuitive intelligence in the connection with that, and optimizing your body. Like, people take it for granted of what, if you really optimize your body, you got to remember that your body is essentially your mind. Everything is holistically connected. And it's like, as above, so below, as within, so without. It's our reality that we perceive on our external reality is a projection of the internal environment. And really what we're living is, if we're going in deep into like our chakras, our organs, the spirits that are in each of our organs that make up the chakras, then like, our reality is essentially the dream state that is being of each organ, each chakra, that's being projected outwards, and that's where we're living. So if you're not optimized, if your organs aren't aligned as fuck, if your chakras aren't aligned as fuck, then you're gonna have a distorted reality as an outcome. And then because of that, there's going to be a lot of shadow. There's going to be a lot of shadow self. And that's one of the main traits of the king archetype. It's that the king's not afraid to look away. Or I should say to look at the shadow. Most people would always look away from the shadow, like they're scared. But the king isn't afraid to look at the shadow and confront it. And that's definitely, again, you need the warrior spirit as well in you to be able to do that. Like you said, the warrior doesn't necessarily mean that you go out fucking people up and fighting all the time and you're good at armed hand-to-hand combat. It's more so to do with the courage to face the dragon. And the dragon is 10 times out of 10, you are the dragon, but you're also the warrior that has to face it. And Paul says this quote a lot, and it is one of the best quotes ever, which is from Joseph Campbell, which is, "The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek." And that's the main one that I kind of live by, in that anything that you find that fears, that you're scared of, you know that there's going to be some reward if you confront it. You don't know what the reward may be. It may not be a physical reward, and it may not happen. You may not get the reward. You may not get the treasure straight up. It may be something that you may gain it years down the line, but it's all about it's all about confronting your fears and really seeking completion of yourself. That's what self-mastery is really about. It's about that unification of the duality of your soul, or the polarity, the polar opposites of your soul. And we seem to be entering a time, dude, where it's like more and more males are interested in exploring that other side of them. I know that a few generations before us, that was the last thing that was on most males' minds. I know that from my dad's generation and the generation above that, they would not have any of that. If you were talking about any of this, fuck, you're getting a slap around the head, or probably going to be missing a few teeth. But nowadays it's becoming more and more open, and I think that's just a general reflection of where we're at as a collective whole. We are evolving. It's been a slow process, and there's been many roadblocks and obstacles in the path, but together we are starting to evolve, and males are beginning to evolve. And I think that is in direct answer to the rise of the toxic feminine. Yeah, the toxic femininity that's really starting to rise, which was a direct result of the toxic masculinity. And what we really need is, we need both. We need that divine masculine. We need us males to embody that divine masculine, and we need the females out there to embody that divine feminine. And that's how we're gonna get our way out of this shit that we've caused here on Earth. That's the only way we're gonna be able to do it, through getting back in touch with who we really are at the deepest level, on a soul level, and getting back in touch with our bodies, getting back in touch with our minds, our spirits, taking control of our own sovereignty, of our consciousness. And I know that you guys over there are doing great work. You guys are always out doing your plant medicines. You're doing the brotherly love work. You're doing, just do it. Get back into like almost, tribal shit. Like back in community building, back like with communal goals, and you've all got a joint goal, a joint sort of vision that you're all working towards. And yeah, it's inspiring, dude. It really is. And you may not see it because you're over in the statesides, but there are people around the world that are following suit, and big changes are being made. And that's what I mean. You never, by another thing as well, you facing your fears, getting that treasure. The treasure might not necessarily be something that you possess. It may be that treasure of you facing your fear is actually someone else's treasure, in that they're gaining from you facing your fear. And you never know what your actions are, the implications of your actions are going to have on someone on the other side of the world, which is why I really like doing this podcast, talking to people like yourself, talking to anyone, because I'm getting to meet new people. I'm getting to experience new shit, make new contacts. But at the same time, I don't know if there's some kid over in Japan that's got a pretty good understanding of English that's listening to this and being like, yo, Yeah, this sounds about right. I'm gonna give this a try. There might be some kid in Cambodia that's like, all right, let's give this a go. And for me, that's just as rewarding as anything that happens on my physical level for me. Like knowing that I get to help other people. Even if I don't get the credit, not even if I get the conscious credit for it. It's the fact that it is helping people, and that's really what it's all about, in my opinion, at the end of the day.
Dude, I love that. Oh, brother, that was all. I love that. That's so cool. I definitely see eye to eye.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's what I mean. Like, there's definitely a time and place for this in today's age. There's a need for it. We need conscious people and conscious males as well, because that's the thing with, like, especially with that sort of, with a lot of, with femininity itself, with the divine feminine, it is the creative force of the universe. It's very chaotic, but it has no direction. It has nothing to steer it and guide it, and that is exactly what the divine masculine is. It's that directional force. So that's what we need. We need that unification of both to be able to actually come up with a vision and then have that creative potential to create and manifest that vision, but at the same time actually have the direction in order to steer us to it. And that's where that balance needs to come into play. That golden path needs to be walked.
Right. And you know, what comes up for me as well on that thought is, like, you know, especially in the fitness industry or even in competitive athletes in general, like, they have a lot of direction in terms of their fitness goals and how they program and what their training is. It can be very regimented.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just opening them up to using that same level of discipline, motivation, et cetera, but just gearing it, you know, spreading that focus a little bit wider. Open, you know, the aperture needs to be wider so you can see more. And, like, yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. And what, you know, I share this all the time. Like, what's the worst that could happen? What's the worst that could happen by putting your hands over your food and just saying things? Like, what's this? Like, man up. Like, you're afraid to. And again, I say this just, you know, honestly from my heart. It's like, what's the worst that could happen? Nothing. There's no risk. There's no risk to this stuff. Maybe it's going to feel a little uncomfortable, but like you said perfectly, it's like what being a warrior is the courage. As soon as you acknowledge your fear, lean into it. As soon as you have the awareness that you are afraid of something, it is your responsibility as a man and as a warrior to start acting on that. Mm-hmm. If not, then you're either closing off to it or you're running away. And that's where I also think the community aspect can be very helpful too, because, you know, we can only see so much of ourselves, right? But for those people who are very close to you and know you and you truly trust and open up with, like, they can see parts of you that you may not be aware of. And so they can also hold you accountable. Like this notion of, like, what am I not looking at that came up into a last ceremony? Like, that actually was brought up to me by one of my best friends, one of the facilitators. Like, dude, you're not looking at certain things in your life. And he kind of, based off of his observation, kind of brought that up to me. And I was like, dude, you're fucking right. You're right. I need to step up. I need to look at those areas. And, like, thank you. Thank you for calling me, because I know he loves me and I know he wants to see me do well and the best for me. And that's where sometimes having someone who can hold you accountable can be helpful. But I mean, being a warrior is not exactly, like you said, is not just this combat. It's being a warrior inside, being courageous enough to face those fears head on. As soon as you feel it, I feel you have that responsibility to act on it. So, you know, it might sound strange, or it might sound foo-foo to do a working in exercise or to put your feet on the grass, but who cares?
What if you got to lose? Yeah. What if you got to lose?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Just do it.
Yeah.
And you'll thank yourself after, I guarantee it.
Yeah. Nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's, definitely a powerful philosophy to embody. And yeah, we just need more people just fighting the good fight, and yeah, just getting in touch with their king, warrior, magician, lover, spirit, and then really yeah, just fulfilling their own destiny of self-actualization. And in the process, that's what it's all about. Save yourself, save the world. That's how we're going to do it. Everything is on an individual level. And then once you start to better yourself, you start to resonate on a higher level, law of entrainment, you start to then gain traction to other people on similar levels. And then you all sort of just progress and evolve together. And that's how we're going to do this. And yeah, Mike, I'm just checking the time, brother. So it's like we're literally tied this one up, because I know that you've got to go in a little bit, and we have been going on for quite some time now. So again, mate, I really appreciated your time. Really did appreciate the talk as well, man. Really loved it. Time went quick. So yeah. So for everyone that's enjoyed it, whereabouts can they find more about you, dude? If is you got your website, your social media handles, any new events coming up that you want to make people aware of, or anything around those lines?
Yeah. So the best place is Instagram, which is mike.salemi, S-A-L-E-M-I. So I'm active there most often. And if anyone wants any kettlebell information, I just came out with, took me about over a year. I mean, it took me 15 years to develop the information for it, but a year in development. And you can go to programs, not www, but programs.mikesalemi.io. And you'll see my new Mastering the Kettlebell program. Paul did like 8 lectures in there on working in for me as a bonus for people by the full program. I'm actually going to Paul's next week to actually film a surprise bonus edition for more people to buy on, like us training together. So there's some really, really cool stuff. There's over 500 videos in that program, and it's really for the most, it's not for everyone, but it's effing for the people who truly, truly want to learn and who want that information. I taught in the UK once, but we're working on some dates for a follow-up UK trip where I'll teach bells and bags and perks bands. And so stay tuned for that. But my website is www.mikesalemi.io. So website, and then Instagram, and then programs.mikesalemi.io for the kettlebell program.
Sweet, brother, sweet. All right, guys, you heard it there. So hopefully you've enjoyed this one. Let's tie this one up for this evening. That's episode 53 of... Actually, guys, before I fucking end this one, please let me know what you think. Let me or Mike know what you think when after you've listened to this. Drop him a message on Instagram. Drop me a message on Instagram. Let me know. I really want your feedback on this one. And yeah, cool. Let's close this one up, guys. Stay woke as fuck. We'll catch you on the next episode. Peace out.